This is Joost Maglev of www.joostmaglev.com and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast, one fan's exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band.
So I'm delighted that Joost Maglev has managed to find time in his busy schedule to talk to me this evening. I'd love to share with you some things about Joost. He's a very passionate Yes fan, as I think will come over in this conversation. So Joost, tell us a bit about yourself, where you live, where you're from, and something about your background.
Well, first of all, thanks, Kevin, for having me. And yes, my name, my stage name basically is Joost Maglev. I'm from the Netherlands. I'm 35 years old at the moment, and I have been making music since my high school days, basically, when I also started to be a fan of Yes around 1991. I'm a bass player, basically. That's my main thing. I have been doing that for that amount of time. For the rest, I'm writing music, producing music, I'm singing on it. I've recorded an album which I released in 2005, on which I play almost all instruments myself. Nowadays, I'm more or less in bands, several bands or projects. And one of the main things I'm doing right now is a project where I'm producing and writing songs for the lead singer of my previous band, which is a project called Scarlet Panther. And you can find that on YouTube as well.
Lovely. We'll ask you at the end to mention a few of those links so we can get to hear the music that you make. So you say you're a bassist. Did the bass playing start before you heard Yes Music, or after? Or was Yes Music something of an inspiration for you for the bass?
I think it started a little bit before I got into Yes Music, and the time I was listening still to a lot of pop music, and it was just a matter of me liking music, starting in a band and just picking up the bass that was in the music room, you know, when we had music at school, just picking up the bass which had the little stickers on it, which note is which, and just try to jam out some songs. And we started with tracks like Beatles and, I don't know, Billy Joel, things like that. But yeah, the drummer of that band, he was listening to his record collection, his dad's record collection, basically. And he had a lot of Yes records, you know, the real vinyl stuff. And he was sharing that around on tapes. And that really got me going into Yes, basically the entire musical picture. So yeah, the Chris Squire bass, it really became an influence after that. Actually, I do own and possess a Rickenbacker 4001, the actual Chris Squire signature bass. So yeah, with that yellow finish, it's a beautiful, marvelous thing to play. Actually, I have been refurbishing it a little bit and using it. I have used that bass. I mean, you cannot sell that bass anymore as a mind condition bass because, yeah, I've been playing that thing for 20 years. Well, 15, probably around that.
Right. I mean, I don't know a lot about basses. How does the Rickenbacker differ from any other kind of bass? Does it have a particular sound that Chris uses, or what can you tell us about it?
The story can be so long. I mean, for starters, really, Rickenbacker, the man who started it, Adolf Rickenbacker, in the early 20th century in America, he was one of the first people to try and implement a pickup strategy where you use a horseshoe to just enhance the sound you can get from just trying to pick up the acoustic strings electrically. And that's basically what you can see very prominent on Chris Squire's bass, is that the pickup that's nearest to the bridge has this big iron thing around it. That's basically a thing that was designed in those early years to enhance that sound coming from that element. Nowadays, it's not that necessary anymore. I mean, those kinds of technologies are really refined. But yeah, Rickenbacker was experimenting with that with early steel guitars in the pre-war years and taking that to their guitars and basses as well. So yeah, starting from that, that is basically particularly what's still interesting about the sound that Rick Becker makes. It can be very loud and very soft at the same time. And well, to just go further and talk about Chris's really specific style of playing and style of connecting the basses. As far as I know, he when he got his first bass, he wired it for stereo use. So he's modified it so he had two outputs, one for each different element, and then he uses the bridge pickup. The neck pickup, which is the warmest one. He will use that through a bass amp to get enough warm sounds from it, and then usually wires the bridge pickup, you know, the big one, which can have a little bit more punchy sound, wire that straight through a guitar amp, and thus creating that really, really specific sound of, yeah, it can have a lot of bass and a lot of treble as well. And yeah, it's definitely interesting. I think he was a pioneer in doing that, and many different kind of techniques have been invented to try and mimic that, but actually wiring a stereo bass through two sets of amps, yeah, I think it started with Chris.
Right. And obviously his technique is something that people always talk about with a certain amount of amazement in their voices. Does that combine? So the way he sets up the bass, does that combine with his technique? Is his technique unique or, you know, have plenty of people use the same sort of technique?
I think it's quite unique in a way that, well, he is obviously a pick guitar player. He plays with a plectrum. And yeah, he over the years tried to evolve a sort of technique where he also uses his thumb as well as his pick to create a very rich harmonic sound. And I think that the splendidness, the originality of Chris's technique is that he gets so much out of tone, just a pure bass guitar tone. You can always pick out when a certain bass line is Chris or just someone trying to be like Chris or playing a Chris line, you know. Chris is immaculate in that way and cannot be imitated in that way.
Yeah, that's interesting you should say that because I found on YouTube or someone tweeted a link, I think, to Run With The Fox, which is Chris Squire and Alan White's Christmas single. And before this year, I'd never heard it. And the one that I found on YouTube, the recording of it, was a guy, I don't know who it was actually, who was doubling Chris's bass line and playing along with him on the record. And because you could hear the bass line so much better, you really did get a sense of how he'd constructed that bass line. And it did seem to be constructed in a very different way. And listening as I am this week, because I'm doing the podcast episode about Keys to Ascension, and listening to those lines that he puts together, I mean, they're very melodic bass lines, it seems to me, and the way that he uses the whole pitch range of the guitar, of the bass guitar, in a single piece, seems to me to be taking a different attitude towards what a bass line should be.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's all based on his musical talent. I mean, he's a very all-round musician who indeed ended up playing the bass because of his rather big hands. So, yeah, I'm guessing he's taking that kind of full musical approach, like if he would be a guitarist or a piano player and just play those things, the things he likes on a bass and, yeah, you know, mastering the whole range, the mid-range, the higher range, and even the low notes, of course, on that bass guitar. That's what makes it so interesting. And it's terrible to mix down, so I'm still pretty amazed that Yes albums sound the way they sound. They still sound so good, you know, without needing that constant low bass sound emanating through it, but just getting the most out of playing melodies on the bass and keeping it together. It's amazing, really.
It is. I do find him amazing, and the way he can also sing harmony at the same time. I did read a long time ago now, I think, you know, when they first started out the band, that Chris did need a bit of work on those harmonies, but he's certainly got it down by now.
Yeah, well, who wouldn't? I mean, I've been trying it as well, of course. I've been playing in a couple of bands the last couple of years where I'm doing backing vocals and bass guitar as well at the same time. And yeah, something I took to heart, which I once heard Chris say, is like, first you have to get your bass act together. I mean, you really know that part by heart, what you're playing right there. Then only then it's time to start thinking about how you're going to do the vocals. And yeah, just keeping practicing that, it made me also, well, not to just boast my own image or anything, but just I think by practice I can also do things like that, just playing the bass and then trying to concentrate on the actual vocals, which is much harder to me anyway, so...
Right. I think also what's come so across to me about Chris, seeing him live, I've seen him live, I think 4 or 5 times, I can't remember now, and in countless videos on YouTube and elsewhere, of course, is that besides the fantastic bass playing, the fantastic harmony singing, is that his personality just comes over live. I mean, he's a very large man, of course, but his personality seems to be even larger than his physical stature.
Yeah, I think so. It was also amazing. Last time I've seen them live was in November. They were playing in Holland here for the Fly From Here tour.
Yeah.
And yeah, indeed, it was amazing again. I was smack at the front of the stage, just in front of Chris, and he struts up and down, and it looks so amazing. And I even managed to have a little short talk with him afterwards, and yeah, he is like a gentle giant, basically. Just talking to him, he is high spirited, he's funny, you know, he's a man to be loved in a way, like even maybe someone could love the big teddy bear or something like that.
Okay, well, let's just think about a bit more about the rest of the band, or at least the band as a whole. What is it, do you think, that about the band which keeps you coming back for more over all these years that you've been listening to them?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that question indeed, and I guess it's something magical which happens when the band is trying to create intricate music, you know, not like writing simple pop songs, but doing something intricate, but just always keeping in mind that the thing has to be beautiful, you know, not making prog just because you want to stuff in as many notes as possible in a song, but just... create a song from different movements, coming back to certain melodies in different time signatures or different modulations. It makes listening to those songs like a sort of blessing, and you learn so much from that. Like even when I try to think in terms of songwriting, knowing where a certain melody or a chord can progress or come back to a certain other bit you have been writing. It's like a treasure trove for every songwriter in that way. And even for a listener, it's not like, well, I've had much discussion about this in the past where people are just blaming prog rock for like, oh, it's just guys playing many notes and stuff like that. And I could always explain what kind of stuff was happening in Yes Music, and then always they said, but... you know, if it's only that, why do you listen to it? But that's because just the magic of it is that you cannot explain how the beauty of it touches you, because it just does. And even though I can explain because they're doing that kind of modulation, I like it. But the real thing is that when that particular moment in music happens, it just lifts your spirit, you know, it just takes you away. Things like that you cannot explain.
Yes, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more there. However, I would like to ask you about your feelings about the music that Yes has made over the years, which doesn't really fit into that progressive genre slot that you've just defined there really nicely for us. So what about the earliest Yes tracks, which on those first, well, certainly the first album, and also the albums in the 80s, which were much more Trevor Rabin inspired, and most of them written by Trevor. And most of those, although he did have some very, very wonderful prog moments in there, for example, on Talk. But it was a lot more straightforward. So how do you react to the first album and also the Trevor Rabin stuff?
Well, I like so many different kinds of music. So when it gets indeed to being just pop songs, which I'm writing basically also most of the time, I also think there's still so much quality there. I must say the first album or the first two albums, maybe for that matter, I haven't heard in a while. I don't often come back to them, but I know there are some real gems on there. I can remember one song called Sweetness, which is, if you like that kind of hippie thing happening, it's beautiful.
Yes.
John Anderson was indeed just discovering how good he could write those kind of songs. So that's great. And Trevor, I just adore Trevor, basically. I think he's a great guitarist. He's a very talented songwriter, of course. He's now writing soundtracks for many movies.
Yes.
I think he's a brilliant music persona, to call it like that. And I must say, I have had periods and still have periods from time to time when I would just listen to only one Yes album, which Trevor was on over and over again. I can remember in my high school days even listening to Big Generator just for a month without listening to anything else, basically. Because contrary to what many people will want to say about Big Generator, in comparison to all the other Yes stuff that's around, it's still beautiful music that's on there.
Really
good, catchy pop music with strong melodies happening all together on one album. And even though maybe it was hard to make it for the guys at the time, but it's good. And the same thing with Talk, indeed. It captures the best of both worlds. It's also in my list of favorites. Because it's heavy, it's very inspired, and there's some prog moments there, and indeed, and yeah, it's just a total really good AOR album to listen to.
Yeah, I think I agree with the majority of what you're saying there. Do you think that the 80s stuff with Trevor is Yes, or do you not think it's Yes, or do you think it doesn't really matter?
I think it's Yes. I think it's I think all of Yes is Yes, in the fact that these are the kind of incarnations you get, as sometimes even Rick Wakeman stated, like just like you have a certain symphony orchestra which have members changing all the time, and so Trevor Rabin era Yes is just as much Yes and has the same legacy to call it that way, because that's how it was at the time. And I can remember going to fan club days where there would be parents who would be very much into 70s Yes, and kids who would love the Rabin things going on. And you know, they each have their share of fans. I like it both. I think many fans will like both of the styles. Other fans are totally entitled to think of any type of Yes, be it Yes West or the classic lineup, what they think. But for me, to do what they have done in the more than 40 years, what they've been doing, it just surpasses the definition of a band. So,
yeah, absolutely. I agree. Now, I can't let you go without talking about Benoit David. You've obviously seen him once or more than once. What do you think about that then? You say there's been lots of changes of personnel, and that's just part of the story of Yes, and I agree with you there. What about this latest change, and what do you think of the latest album?
To start with the change, basically, because that happened already a couple of years ago. As I said, and then I must stick to my words, that every kind of change, every kind of lineup deserves its own kind of legacy. And I think with Benoit, that's not very different. He puts a stamp on Yes, especially in this era, and that's always good. It's interesting to hear that, though in voice he sounds a lot like John Anderson, of course. Everyone has heard that. What bothers me most from a musician's point of view is the kind of unhappiness that evolved around the whole period where it seems that John Anderson got ill and the rest of the band wanted to tour, and they never really, well, it's not like asking for permission, but just telling John, like, okay, John, we're going to tour anyway. I know you're sick. We wish you well, but we're going to tour with another singer. As far as I know, and I've read from interviews and heard from interviews with John, he was never contacted about that. And I would think, yeah, even after working together for so long, you would expect that musicians would handle it a little bit nicer to one another. So, in a way, what bothers me about that is if you ever want to get John back in the band, you would have to work once again through a whole bunch of issues and setting some, you know, personal difficult situations aside, which has happened so much in the band. And of course, one always keeps up hope because, even Chris said that he would love to work with John again in if the when the tour is over, only when the current tour and the work with Benoit is over. I'm not sure how John thinks about it at the moment, but I'm not sure how John is in terms of wealth, but I can imagine that touring with Yes again is something that really also impacts your wallet in a way, so to say. not to be degrading about that, but I'm also guessing that's one of the reasons why Yes really wanted to tour with Benoit and doing it like that, because you have to still make a living even though you're over 60. Yes. I'm sure you're making maybe something still with royalties, but even as far as I know from that, I know that their manager at the time, at the end of the 70s, really managed to take off with a lot of their income. So never let it be said that the Yes members are rich or anything, because most of them aren't, and that's, it's a shame.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the one thing which worries me most about the situation, because I suppose if you look back through the history, that there have been many times where reconciliations have happened. I think the thing which worries me most is the recordings that I've heard most recently of John. His voice really sounds quite fragile. And I'm just wondering that nobody goes on forever. And I'm just wondering if he really could stand, a full tour situation. I'd love to see him back in the studio, but touring, I'm not so sure he could really do it.
Yeah, I'm not so sure either. I haven't heard much of the most recent John Anderson. All I know is that he can be healthy if he wants to, or at least take care of his health. But the problem with aging musicians, they're all growing a day older, is that sometimes this scary feeling comes over you, like, which one of the many ones, the great members we had through the years, would be the first one to go, you know? That's something none of us look forward to, but I've had this with many of the members, of course. Rick Wakeman has said it many times, like, he feels like he's on borrowed time since even the early 90s, and at one particular time, about 10 years ago, I saw an interview with Alan White, and I was thinking, like, oh my God, he looks so bad. But still, you know, they can get better again, and that's what I'm hoping and wishing for John as well, for everyone, basically.
So to round us off now, this has been a really fantastic chat we've had. What would you like to see from Yes in the future, and what do you think will actually happen?
What I would like to see is maybe there's been so many members that they could maybe one time set aside some differences and maybe do a really big tour again, like the Union tour, but maybe involve more people and make it a tour less evolved around management companies trying to make a buck, like the situation that happened with Peter Banks not being allowed to play with the Union lineup, stuff like that happening, you know. Whatever would happen if there would be a Yes still where those members could be on stage again and Peter could be there, Trevor Horn and Jeff Downes could be there, as well as Rick Wakeman. I mean, I'm sure they really respect each other a lot as musicians, but to think about what fans would love to see Yes doing is basically be to do something like that in honor of themselves and the music they made. So that's something I would like to see. I'm not really sure that's going to happen anyway, but
What do you think will happen though? There will another album with this lineup, or
well,
what do
I
you
was
see?
I was surprised that this album was coming up in the first place. I mean, thinking about that for over 10 years, you would be thinking that Magnification would have been the last album, and to have something like this happen again. And also that they are managing to do it with high quality, but still not being tied to big record companies or things like that, just do it on their own. It gives hope that maybe the guys would indeed do more albums in this particular time period. For now, it, of course, it depends if John would ever want to come back, but that would, of course, break open the band as we know it. So...
Yeah.
I think the chances are smaller that that would happen than maybe another album with Benoit or maybe even someone else.
Nice.
But, as we know with Yes, you never know. You just got to love it and take it as it is. And as far as you were asking what I thought of the last album, I think it's a great album, really. It has some really nice listenable music to it. I think the production is great. Actually, I don't think what John Anderson is going on about Trevor's production being not good. I think it's really pleasant to listen to, and I've been introducing it to friends I have now who don't know much about Yes, and they also find it very pleasant to listen to as well.
Wonderful. Yes, I couldn't agree with you more there about Fly From Here. I think it's really great. Well, listen, thank you very much indeed, Joost. It's been fantastic to speak to you. Before we go, you must give us a few web addresses to go to, which I'll put in the show notes for this interview special. But where can we go and find out more about your music?
Sure. Well, main place to go is basically my website, which I don't update often. That's www.joostmaglev.com. That's J-O-O-S-T. That's my first name, and M-A-G-L-E-V. Is the stage name, and then .com. I don't update often, but I have some links to bands I've been in and projects I'm working on. For example, there are links to Scarlet Panther. She has her own YouTube and her own website as well. There's the most recent music that I've been working on lately. I'm working with her on some more music. And the band I'm in at the moment with some other people is called Equisa. You write that as E-Q-U-I-S-A. It's so fresh, basically, that we don't really have a website out at the moment. But we do have our own Facebook page where you can try and find us. And there is also a link on that Facebook page to our first demo recording, or basically promotional recording, where we recorded 3 tracks, which is basically in the melodic metal genre.
Great. We can also catch up with you on Twitter, of course.
Yeah, of course, at Joost Maglev.
Fantastic. All right, well, thank you very much indeed. I'm sure everybody else will enjoy listening to this chat we've had all about Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you too. Bye-bye.